Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Episode 254, How to Save Money on Health Insurance and Open Enrollment Explained with Eileen Doherty.
Welcome to the Frugal Friends Podcast, where you'll learn to save money, embrace simplicity, and live a richer life. Here are your hosts, Jen and Jill.
Ooh, 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 ooh. Welcome to the Frugal Friends Podcast. My name is Jen.
My name is Jill.
And today we are bringing you one of the most exciting episodes we've ever done. That's right. Health insurance, specifically open enrollment, because for many of our listeners in the U.S., open enrollment starts today.
Ooh, We're on the edge of our seats, but make sure you're sitting down because, like Jen said, super hot topic.
Yeah. Especially if you're driving, please sit down.
Yes. But seriously, so glad to be talking with Eileen because this is an area that is so confusing and we could do well to be wise with how we're spending in this category. I mean, for most of us, I think we mentioned it in this episode, it's a high ticket line item in our expenses, you know, housing, transportation, food, and health insurance. Like, those are our top expenses any given month and certainly annually. Not just the health insurance, but then the costs of healthcare above and beyond health insurance. So there's just so much to be considering. And Eileen really helps break it down into some really bite-sized pieces of what we can be thinking about when it comes to the type of health insurance that we choose.
Yeah. And we hear so much on the internet, you know, pay attention to your groceries, pay attention to your coupons and your rebate apps and yada, yada. When we talk about cutting expenses here on the Frugal Friends Podcast, we look at it as an 80-20 view. So let's focus on the 20% of our expenses that get us 80% of our results. Instead of the small latte purchases, we're looking at our big multi-$1,000 purchases, and health insurance is one of those. So we hope that you really are excited for this episode because it could save you tens of thousands of dollars over your lifetime, way more than cutting lattes.
That's no joke. But first, our sponsors. Today's sponsor is brought to us by Best Case Scenarios. They're doing a hard push to remind the general public that they still exist. When Jen and I had our intro call with them, we did sense a tinge of bitterness regarding how much attention worst case scenarios get. And best case scenarios aren't promising that it will always pan out that way, but they do want us to consider them. Best case scenarios, avoiding catastrophes, de-escalating that situation, and championing that dream job. Also, best case scenarios are strong supporters of high yield savings accounts. You can connect the dots as to why that might be. If you're here for best case scenarios, check out CIT Bank's high yield savings account at frugalfriendspodcast.com/CIT. They're currently offering 2.7% APY on high yield savings accounts. best case scenarios. Here for all the best case things.
Love that. Thank you, best case scenarios. What an underrated scenario. So if you are super interested in health care, we actually have some other episodes to queue up that are just as exciting as this one. So the first one is one we recently did, which I think is super important that everyone should listen to sometime in their life, sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. Episode 230. So that is how to negotiate medical bills. We did with Dr. Virgie Ellington. She is a doctor and patient care advocate. And so she, we go step by step how to negotiate medical bills. And then we also touch on medical debt as well. But really, really good episode. Because if you have to use health insurance, you're going to have bills too. And maybe you think you can't negotiate them because you have health insurance, but that is untrue. Episode 12, how to save money on healthcare. We talk a little bit about everything. So not just insurance, but also healthcare sharing, preventative care that counts, stuff like that. So that's way back in the archives.
It's very old.
To listen to. Yes. But we still stand by what we said in that one. So oldie but a goodie. But let's get into today's episode. Very impactful. Definitely one to share with your family and friends, because nobody's going to tell you, I have no clue what I'm doing with health insurance. Definitely, if you've got a company Slack, drop this one in the company Slack and whatever HR channel and the pizza channel, whatever. Somewhere people will see it, because everyone should know the things that we're talking about in today's episode. And we're talking about it with a friend of mine, Eileen Doherty. You know, you can do a podcast for 4.5 years and still not be able to find the right guests. We have guests email us every day trying to be on the show. But when you're just trying to find a female health insurance expert, those are much harder to find than I built 11 businesses and made $7 million and sold all my companies. Interview me. Not a lot of those. Not a lot of female health insurance experts. And then you just turn around at the gym and you're like hearing, I'm Eileen. I've worked in the U.S. healthcare industry for 25 years. I'm an executive vice president at a health insurance payments company. So I am unbiased to networks. And you're like, what? She didn't really say
around.
That. But
every
I did
now
say,
and then I find the guest that I need, and she was right there waiting for me. Turn right. around at so, the gym.
I did say I had a podcast, and Eileen was like, "Oh, I've been on podcasts," and I'm like, "Oh, what do you talk about?" And she's like, "Health insurance," and I'm like, "Huh?" And so Eileen, not just an expert on health insurance, but also a really cool lady. So let's get into it.
Turn around. I'm not going to be able to get that one out of my head.
Eileen, welcome to the Frugal Friends podcast. We are very excited to have you here to talk about this really dry subject, but hopefully we can amp it up a little bit.
I find it exciting. The pleasure is all mine.
It's exciting for me just because I know very little about this topic. So just mm-hmm. the prospect of learning and giving tangible tips, that's exciting. But you know, we're going to sprinkle it with fun some way, somehow.
Gotcha.
Yeah. One of the reasons we like to interview experts and we like to critique Google articles is because when I was a writer, the two topics that I was like, I do not write about these, I'm not an expert, are insurance and taxes. Like any type of insurance, please don't make me write about this. I don't know it. And then they would always assign me insurance
Wonderful.
And tax articles. And I'm like, if they're doing it to me, they're doing it to other people. So be skeptical about what you read on the internet. And like, let's talk to you. Let's talk to you. You got a background in this. Let's demystify signing up for health insurance and using it. So let's talk about what is annual open enrollment and why do we have it? Why can you only do this 1 month a year?
Okay, that's a great question. So open enrollment, strictly speaking, right, is the yearly period, usually in the fall, when people can enroll in health insurance plans for the next calendar year. And the reason why it only happens once a year is because most health insurance plans have annual-based limits, deductibles, and maximums that they've calculated in order to manage the risk for the group of people that they are insuring. And because they're based on an entire year, they can't have people switching plans throughout the year and still manage that risk. It's a unique aspect about the way that health insurance plans are put together that leads to us being only able to enroll once a year. They do allow for other time periods for enrollment, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, but they try to keep them to a minimum. The open enrollment period will vary based on your, if you have an employer-based health insurance plan, and those are normally like around 3 weeks in November. And most 50% of the US population is covered by their employer's health plan. But if you have health insurance, say through the ACA, then the open enrollment runs from November 1st to January 15th. And during that time period, you can go in and elect a new plan that matches your situation, your current situation, as well as possible. And then it will become effective on January 1st in most cases.
That's the best explanation I have heard from anyone. Usually these conversations about open enrollment are being had with other people who don't know why. So maybe that's part of it. But we're always just like, and why only once a year? And then it ends there and we move on frustrated and ignorant. So thank you, Eileen, for demystifying that.
Well, like the U.S. health insurance is weird, right? It was not, health insurance in the United States was not originally created by health insurers. The very first plan that was ever created back in like the 1940s was put together by Baylor University Hospital for the Dallas Teachers Union. So hospital administrators created a health plan that covered a set of teachers in a local city. And the patients had absolutely no responsibility. So they said, we'll cover everything no matter what for, it was like 50 cents a month or something. And so no matter how much healthcare you needed. Not surprisingly, the very first thing to happen after that happened is that all of the physicians that were in the network immediately raised all of their rates. And that is the beginning of a long pathway that has led us to the crazy place we are today with U.S. health insurance.
Thanks, Baylor.
Thanks, Baylor.
Yeah.
A bunch of hospital administrators didn't really know how to handle the risk on a health insurance plan. So
Not totally thinking macro
Love
level, like
that.
what are the consequences and the pros and cons of this? Well, but here we are. So you did talk about there could be some exceptions to open enrollment. Can you share a little bit about what that would be, how we might find ourselves in that type of situation?
Sure. So for most health insurance plans, whether they be employer-based or if they're government-sponsored, you will have an option to change your enrollment outside of an open enrollment. Those are generally referred to as special enrollment, and they're based on life events. So if you get married, if you have a baby, if you adopt, if you get divorced, if you start a new job, you have the opportunity to enroll in a new plan. The rules around how much time you have after those events and when that additional person either becomes effective or terminates are plan dependent. So you have to read your plan documents to truly understand when it's actually going to become effective and when the window is for you to make changes. The ACA actually has another exception, which is if your income changes dramatically, they give you the option to modify your plan during that time period as well.
It's good to know that. It kind of stinks because when you have those opportunities for special enrollment, those are the times where the last thing on your mind is health insurance. And you do only have a certain amount of time to like change that if you need to. So kind of maybe checking with your health insurance plan to see when that is always just a good idea. Just kind of be familiar.
I mean, I know it's boring, but reading your plan document is important part mm-hmm. of being, of owning a health insurance plan. And I mean, health insurance is becoming, I think, the fifth largest outgoing cost for an American household today. Mm-hmm. So since, and that's not always been the case, but patient responsibility has been continuously rising for decades. That is the portion that is paid by the patient on their health plan. And because of that, it's becoming more and more important for health insured people to become educated about their health plan. But the reality is that the health insurance literacy in the United States is very low. And that's not surprising because it's super complicated. It is a complicated insurance plan. A lot of people don't understand how to use it. And most of the time, unless you have a chronic illness, you're not using it more than 3 or 4 times a year. So it is something that people don't have a lot of motivation to become experts at until they really need to. And unfortunately, that is often past the time they've already made the choice about their health plan. So...
So true. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just know it to be true anecdotally. Even.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes it's in the back of my head, like I really should make sure that I've got the right type of plan and coverage. But it's like, yeah, I rarely go to the doctor, so it's not front of mind. But I do sometimes feel like I'm playing with fire a bit with the current plan that I have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this reminds me of right before the hurricane last week. I asked my homeowner's insurance broker to send me a copy of both my policies. And I was shocked that I chose, because me back when I was buying my house, I chose the highest named hurricane deductible, right? And it was too late at that point. By the point they have a named storm in your area, you can't rebind your contract. That's sort of what this is like. You know, you're invincible until you're not. And then you are reliant on your health plan that you chose a year ago when you thought you were never going to get sick.
Yes.
Yeah. So that leads us into our first of the two questions that are going to be the meat of this episode. So first is... I have insurance through my employer. It's what I got. It's what I chose when I got employed. When should I change? What would prompt me to change that? Because it's much easier for me to just ignore it. So why should I change it and when?
That's a key question for sure. So the most important thing to think about every year when open enrollment comes up is how has your life changed, right? There is a whole group of people that when we were debating about the Affordable Care Act in the early 2000s, we called them the young invincibles, the 20-something-year-olds. So are you single and under 30? The chances are that the amount of healthcare usage you have is very low, except in some extreme situations. So you would want a certain type of plan. But at some point, you're going to possibly get married, want to start a family, and start working towards developing a foundation for that. And not every plan has great fertility coverage or coverage for having a baby. And you need to make sure that those things are well covered in a plan as your family begins to grow and mature. Also, if you have started to encounter healthcare issues that have increased your overall healthcare coverage, you may want to increase the healthcare coverage that you receive. Once you've reached the point where you're a family of 6 with a bunch of young kids and you have a ton of preventative care that needs to be done, it's important to make that as easy as possible. And then as you continue to mature and grow, you're going to find that you'll encounter higher risk areas based on your genetic background. As your children begin to move off to college, you'll be wanting to look for plans that may cover them until they're 26. And you'll start to look at what type of networks are available as you grow older into your sunshine years and are needing a set of doctors that can handle managing your care as you grow older. So age, family composition, that general demographics are things that you have to consider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it almost sounds like every year we would need to reevaluate if what we're using still works.
Interesting that this comes up every year.
Well, not surprisingly, something like 70% of Americans don't choose the right healthcare coverage for their current situation, according to recent studies. But, you know, one of the things like deciding what that coverage is then becomes like a math equation. And who wants to go back to doing math? Like, I mean, I have a spreadsheet that I use, but it can get really complicated. And the reason is this, right? So the majority of Americans still make their decision for their health plan based on premium. What am I paying monthly just to get in the door on my health insurance? They look at premiums. They say that one's $200 and this one is $300. $300 is obviously worse. I'll pick the $200 plan. That's probably like 40, 50% of Americans. Health insurance literacy is growing though. So more people are starting to make their decisions based on deductible, right? Deductible is this other concept. It is the amount of money you have to pay out of pocket before your health insurance kicks in the year. And those health insurance deductibles have been getting higher and higher every year. And now most Americans that are on employer-based insurance are on a high deductible healthcare plan today. So you've got this premium and deductible. So a lot of Americans have started to choose the lower deductible, right? So they'll say, oh man, $5,000 for my family is a lot of money. I'd never be able to pay that. Should I have an emergency? So I'm going to choose the $2,500 deductible. The problem with making that choice is that sometimes you're choosing a lower deductible, but ending up with a higher premium, and the total amount you're paying in premiums throughout the year is more than what you bought down in deductible. And many people don't make that, they don't add that up in their head. So they feel like they're covering themselves better, but actually they're paying more out of pocket monthly in order to de-risk the plan. So that's something to consider. Mm-hmm. Another thing to consider is that most plans today don't end a deductible. Once you've hit your deductible, either for your family or for individuals, you have to pay something called coinsurance. On many plans, that coinsurance is 80-20 or 90-10 up to a certain maximum. What that means is that you still pay 20% or 10% until you reach a maximum dollar amount. Many people don't realize that there's that additional money on the end tail end there. So they'll pick a lower deductible and end up with an 80-20 plan, which actually over the entire cost of the year, if you max it out, is more expensive than if they had chosen a 90-10 plan.
Whew.
So as you can see, this kind of stuff gets really complicated. There's also additional things out there that you need to consider when looking for a plan. My personal favorite is the one that everyone overlooks, which is the quality of the network. Mm-hmm. So one thing that most people don't realize is that there's these big health insurance plans out there that we call them the BUCAs, Blue Cross, United, Cigna, Aetna. And they have the best networks and they sell their networks to other health insurance plans to use. Since they have the biggest networks, they have the biggest ability to negotiate down rates as well on the allowed amounts. So if you have a United plan, you're starting at a lower dollar amount for that service than somebody else's, who might be on what they thought was a cheaper plan with a worse network. Something a lot of people don't consider.
Golly.
How can you tell the difference between a good network and a not so good network? Or maybe even like, where is my doctor? Or where do I want my doctor to be? Like,
so always start with exactly what you just said, right? Start with my doctor, right? Who are all the doctors that my family uses? And if you're looking at a new plan, check to make sure all those doctors are in network. A lot of times people don't even take that step. And once they've moved into the new plan, they now have to get all new doctors, which is a big hassle and can affect your continuity of care. And then you wouldn't get the same amount of the same quality of care in that year that you would expect. Then the next step is there are provider network directories all over the internet. They're required to publish them. You can go and type in your city and see how big the network is and how comprehensive. Do I recognize all those doctors? Is there only one psychiatrist in my entire 100-mile area? And you can get an idea for the depth of the network. Of course, if you hear the names Blue Cross, United, Cigna, and Aetna, like it's going to be a big, comprehensive, well-negotiated network.
For many of us, there comes a time when we need to navigate some complex money situations, and it's tough to know who to trust when receiving crucial financial advice. That's where Fearless Finance comes in.
Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. They're a fee-only financial planning firm that provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour, without the high fees and long-term commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. You can quit whenever you want with no strings attached.
Their planners meet you where you are at on your financial journey. So whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to get expert eyes on your finances to ensure you're on the right track, they can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals.
Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code FRUGAL.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
This might be adjacent to what you've already said, and maybe you've covered it already, but if I'm in a position where I've decided I do want to relook at this and maybe I do need to make a change, are there any things that you would say kind of in general, these are the most important things to be looking at when choosing health coverage?
Yes. So I think a lot of times people focus on the dollars, and that is important. Like I think it is a key feature. But here are a couple other things you might want to consider. So again, the network for me is a really big one because United negotiated discounts are significantly bigger than say a smaller self-funded plan's negotiated discounts would be. But you should also be taking a look at the plan documents, which are always available as part of the open enrollment walkthroughs, to look at plan exclusions and any plan maximums that are on the plan, right? So it's very common for certain things that you may be wanting in the period in life that you're in to be excluded, like fertility treatments. That's a big exclusion. And sometimes that is a really important part of what you need. Also, certain types of diabetes treatments, certain types of drugs that you may be wanting for mental health. There was a big legislation that just passed in the last couple of years for mental health parity, requiring that mental health coverage be equivalent to medical coverage on all plans that are covered by the ACA, but not necessarily on employer-based plans. So it's important to pay attention to mental health coverage. Another thing that I think it's really interesting to consider is the maximums. Most state laws and federal law prevent full healthcare coverage plans from putting like an annual or a lifetime maximum on their benefit. But if you happen to be trying to purchase a plan yourself, be on the lookout for something that they call junk plans or short-term plans in the marketplace. They look too good to be true, and oftentimes they really are. They will put maximums on things like surgical benefits. I've seen one as low as like $4,000 a year for your total surgical maximum. And I can promise you, you can't have surgery anywhere in the United States on anything for $4,000. I mean, my appendectomy was $36,000 10 years ago. So that's, you know, not going to cover you for anything. So those are the things that I think I would be on the lookout for. I also am a huge proponent of health savings account and HRA add-ons to high deductible health plans. It's a great way for you to save money and have a higher deductible without having the health plan try and save for you in premiums.
Yeah, that's I love HSAs too. For people who aren't familiar, an HSA is only, you can only get it with a high deductible healthcare plan. But after usually around $2,000 that you put in, you can invest the rest and you can use it just like a retirement account, which is great. And it's tax-free on all qualified medical expenses. So it's great. I wanted to ask you about this because we had somebody in our group asking about, so she was diagnosed with some kind of healthcare thing and anticipated some medical costs rising, but she loves her HSA. And so she was contemplating, do I go to the lower deductible plan because I do expect rising medical costs, or do I hold to my HSA and keep investing there, maybe use the funds there? Because she didn't know like how much this new thing would cost. It was brand new. So like any advice for maybe somebody kind of dealing with that in general, being like, I might have to go to the, like, I might have some medical stuff this year, but I really love my HSA. Any deciding factors?
I'm a strong proponent of self-insuring whenever possible. I mean, and the ability to, I strongly believe most people should push the deductible as high as they can manage and lower their premium, and then just self-save the remaining money in an HSA if they have that available to them. I'm not as big of a proponent of HRAs, but because that money is then owned by the employer and not by you. But like you said, the HSA is money that you can roll over, you can invest it. If the market's doing well, that money could really be worth even more. It's also tax-free and a great way for you to continue to build your own like way to de-risk your healthcare. However, if you really feel like you are going to have increasing needs in health services, I think it makes a lot of sense to look for a more comprehensive plan and pay the extra money to get more benefits.
Yeah. I mean, and you're only restricted really for a year for whatever plan you have. So if you choose wrong, you can always change it the next year too.
Yes, so. Absolutely.
And yeah. There's a good reason for adding more to that emergency savings.
Mm-hmm. Is the HRA the same as FSA or are those different?
So flexible spending accounts are a little bit different. They normally cover like dependent daycare. And they do sometimes have like health insurance coverage, but usually those are rolled into an HRA. An HRA differs from an HSA in the fact that an HRA is an employer-owned account that the employer puts money in, and the employee can also submit money, but that money is owned by the employer. And when the employee leaves, that money is retained by the employer. Ooh, and if it's not used in the year, it also is still retained by the employer. So it's a benefit, and it's something that employers do to offset employee risk. So it is a good option, but it's not an employee's, it's not the employee's money, and it doesn't have cash value.
Yuck. Okay.
But both of them can be used to pay for qualified health expenses.
Cool. And there's a lot of qualified medical expenses. A lot. Almost anything you could get at CVS. Almost anything.
Yes, absolutely. And I actually used my HSA to pay for my child's travel back from college to go to a health appointment.
Wow.
So, and that was validly covered. Yes. So your HSA has a lot of flexibility around what it can cover to support your health insurance needs and healthcare needs.
Helpful. And you don't have to pull those funds out immediately. You can wait and let it grow if you don't need it. Like I've saved with Kai all of my everything I paid for that pregnancy that I, you know, got a bill and paid for and have an itemized receipt for. Whenever I want, I can take that money out of my HSA and submit that receipt whenever.
Yeah.
So it's great. You can let the stock market pay for your medical treatment. Like just let it grow, let it pay for it, and then take the money out.
I'm just clarifying that Kai is 3 years old and you're saying you could submit for reimbursement from your HSA like 3 years after giving birth?
Yeah, because I had the HSA while I was on that, the plan. Yeah.
I was just saying, you just got to be careful with an HSA when the stock market's not doing that great, that you're not paying more in fees than you are earning from the stock market. So you do have to watch it. Like when you invest it, if you invest just a few $1,000s, sometimes the fees end up being more than you're earning. So you'll want to pull it out to cash. If that happens.
You always want to, obviously, if you're in a high fee investment account, it sometimes makes more sense to just pull it out sooner. Mine is in very low fee index funds that I have easy access to. So I feel good about it. They're the same funds my retirement accounts are in. So I feel good about that. But okay, so back to open enrollment. Give us like, is there a checklist that we can do to like get ready for open enrollment? Any like pre-homework that we can do?
Well, I mean, just making sure that you understand how much you spent in healthcare for the previous year is important.
Hmm.
A lot of times we lose track of how much that is because the equation is so complicated. But if you have an idea of how much the total charge amounts were for all the services that you took on throughout the year, at least a rough amount, that'll help you to be able to evaluate plans as you're looking at them. The next thing is to ensure that when your employer, if you have your health insurance through your employer, when they publish their open enrollment availability of plans, take the time to read through the options, maybe in a little bit more depth than you have in the past. And given what you might, you know, have picked up from us talking today, start thinking about what type of plan would make the most sense for your family and what, you know, financial ability you have to support it. And then lastly, like think about what your family is going to be like in the next year or how you want it to be so that you're prepared for it. If you have healthcare coverage that doesn't have great obstetrics and you're planning to try and have a baby, then you might want to have some thoughts about that when you're going into looking at plan documents.
Mm-hmm. Eileen, any final tips on just ways we can maximize this opportunity when it only comes around once a year? How do we get the best possible? My mind's going to go to like the least expensive for the best thing. And you've given us a lot of tips already, but any final thoughts on how do we maximize this annual opportunity?
Well, so make sure health insurance literacy is like a particular, like has a particular place in my heart and mind right now. I feel like we are very smart consumers as Americans, but we haven't taken the time to educate ourselves on some basic terms and knowledge about health insurance. And I know why. It's not like the forefront of our minds all the time. But as you begin to become a greater consumer of healthcare services, it's important to educate yourself on all of those terms. What's a deductible? What's coordination of benefits? What's a copay and why does it matter? And you know, how are surgical benefits covered and what are possible exclusions? What is an exclusion? That type of information will really arm you as you're heading into the open enrollment season and having to choose what is really a pretty big financial choice for your family in the next year.
Do you have any recommendations on like good websites or resources where people could become more health insurance literate?
Well, so believe it or not, the Affordable Care Act websites are great about explaining a lot of these terms because their job was to take a population that didn't have a benefits or HR department and help them to become more literate for accepting and identifying an insurance plan for themselves. So I find that the ACA marketplace is a great place to find information. There are also a ton of websites out there which are patient advocacy sites that are all about raising literacy. And there is a website called Quizify.com that I really love that has a lot of videos that helps to raise your knowledge level, not just about health insurance, but also about healthcare itself and the different types of choices that you may have to make.
That's amazing. Yeah, because there's so many like add-ons to it. You've got the dependent care FSA or the HRA or do we go HSA or multiple high deductible plans? And there's so much. And for the longest time, I think maybe even sometimes still, I still confuse deductible and premium. Like yeah. I still confuse the two words.
Yeah. And you're not the only one.
Yeah. Yeah.
70% of Americans still don't know the, like, aren't able, because why? You only really think about it once a year. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know what I think about every week? I never have to be reminded of this terminology.
Sometimes multiple times a week.
Multiple yes, multiple times a week.
The Bill of the Week.
That's right. It's time for the best minute of your entire week. Maybe a baby was born and his name is William. Maybe you paid off your mortgage. Maybe your car died and you're happy to not have to pay that bill anymore. Duck bills, buffalo show bills. Bill Clinton, this is the Bill of the Week.
Eileen, every week we invite our listeners or our guests to share with us their Bill of the Week. And we know you have one for us. So let us know it.
All right. So I didn't realize this until the very beginning when we started here, but I picked something a little bit boring. I'm not sure if you guys are going to want to switch me out.
People are just going to get more bang for their buck on the info on this episode.
We're here
That's
for boring.
Exactly right.
They're
going
to get something they didn't expect.
Yeah. And I'm that weird person that gets super excited about all of this. So I don't even notice that you're bored.
Which is why you're here.
But I when you said bring in something that's like a bill or bring in a bill, I thought about these explanation of benefits that we always get in the mail after we have a medical service. And they always say, this is not a bill. And I think it's really interesting, some of the things that can be written on these bills. So I had a friend who also works in the healthcare industry and recently had a baby. And she received an explanation of benefits, which is from your health insurer, from your payer, not from your provider, telling you how they adjudicated the claim that your provider sent to them. So your doctor sent them a claim, they adjudicated it. They put together this beautiful display that's super complicated about how they paid the provider so that you can see what you might owe. And she was looking over her explanation of benefits and noticed that her normal healthy delivery, natural childbirth delivery, was coded as a level 4 emergency. And she didn't understand why. So she called her health insurer and she found out that the doctor's office that she, you know, the provider that she had gone to for her delivery, that's how they upcode it to get the higher rate associated with level 4 emergency childbirth. And they do it for everybody. And
oh my goodness.
So welcome to the US healthcare system. And of course, the insurer had missed it. And they went back and re-adjudicated the claim, which caused a lot of headache for her, because then the provider tried to balance bill the remainder to the patient. And then she had to involve her insurer again. So I thought that might be a little interesting tidbit about not a bill. So sometimes knowledge can actually hurt you rather than help you.
That's not boring, Eileen. I'm fired up over here.
Balance That's billing is fraud. Something that we don't talk about. That is, yeah,
golly.
Is also stupid.
That's, it's not a bill, but it is a headache.
It can be
Holy
a
death. Smokes.
I have a bill from my first birth that's like $100-something. And I was switching insurance because I was part of a layoff 8 weeks before I gave birth. So I was switching from my insurance, which was my coverage, to my husband's insurance, and had something very close, a appointment, some blood work or something very close to the switch. And so they submitted it to both or the wrong one, and they rejected it, and they have me in like collections for this thing that should be covered by insurance, that is covered by insurance, but they just can't figure out who it's covered by. And I was like, I can tell you who it's covered by if you tell me the date. And so they just haven't, it's not their priority, and they don't care about me. So every time I call, they're like, you know, you have something in collections with us. And I'm like, no, I don't.
It's so interesting that you say that,
enough.
That it's that you talk about it like that, because this is something that we in the industry are really interested in right now. Like the experience of healthcare payments from the patient or member's point of view is so negative that we don't even know where to begin to improve the process, either providers or health insurers.
I would have to call every single day to that office to make them care enough to do something about this. And I don't have the time.
I mean, think about when you have to call an airline twice and how negative your reaction is to that, and how much airlines work to try and stop you from having to make those two phone calls. But in the healthcare industry, it's so disparate and there's so many different connection points that we've not been able to create that level of service. And we haven't needed to, because until the last two decades, patients weren't really a significant part of the equation. So none of the systems were built to do that.
Eileen, I love your "this is not a bill." This is amazing. This took quite a turn in this Bill of the Week segment. And I am. I'm feeling the fire in my belly right now. So I'm going to turn it back to our listeners and tell you if you've got a "this is not a bill" or "this is totally a bill" or "a bill you don't have to pay, a bill you do have to pay," whatever it is, visit frugalfriendspodcast.com/bill. Leave us your bill. Even if it gets me fired up, it's a good thing. It makes me feel alive. Mm-hmm. For many of us, there comes a time when we need to navigate some complex money situations, and it's tough to know who to trust when receiving crucial financial advice. That's where Fearless Finance comes in.
Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. They're a fee-only financial planning firm that provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour, without the high fees and long-term commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. You can quit whenever you want with no strings attached.
Their planners meet you where you are at on your financial journey. So whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to get expert eyes on your finances to ensure you're on the right track, they can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals.
Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code FRUGAL.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Now it's time for the lightning round.
Pew, pew. So today, in our vulnerable part of the show, we are all going to share what's an interesting health insurance experience you had, and what did you learn from it?
Oh, this is just an extenuation of the Bill of the Week segment, I think.
I know. I gave it away. Okay. I'll expound on it, though. But so, Eileen, why don't you go first? An interesting health insurance experience you've had and what you've learned. It can be yours or somebody you've witnessed.
So I'll tell a positive one, in which a weird coincidence of my health plan led to a very positive outcome for me. So right after I got married 10 years ago, like literally the week after, I woke up with like pains in my lower abdomen. I am the child of a doctor, so I knew immediately I had appendicitis, but I wasn't on my husband's insurance plan. And before that, I was running my own business, so I didn't really have insurance. So I was uncovered and I hadn't rolled onto his plan yet. And I went to my doctor and he was like, "Yep, you have appendicitis. You need to go to the ER." And I was like, "Well, I'm not on my husband's plan yet. Is there something else you can do?" And he was like, "No, go to the ER." but I was like, we're trying to work it out today. And so he gave me these really strong antibiotics and sent me home. Well, like by midday, my husband had mostly sorted everything out and I went ahead and went to the ER and that I had appendicitis. And the next morning I had an appendectomy through the ER. And when it all got sorted out in the end, the way I had been admitted to the ER and the way that they coded it, my surgery ended up being an emergency surgery. And on the United Healthcare plan at that time, they covered it 100%. So even though my appendectomy, which slightly ruptured and became like a really big deal, was like a $70,000 event, I paid $0. And
wow.
After that happened, that plan realized the flaw of their setup and changed the plan for everyone the next year. But so a bit of knowing, like if you know the details and you know how to work the plan, then you can really do well. that's the lesson.
Wow. I mean, you didn't do that well because you had a partially ruptured appendix.
True. I mean,
but there was a silver lining.
You're doing great,
great
now.
Yes.
Health insurance wise, it was good. Like health wise, that was questionable.
Yeah.
I get.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I no longer have an appendix either, Eileen.
We're like twins.
Oh, buddies. I have no idea. That was when I was younger. I should ask my parents how that whole insurance thing worked out. But
yeah, finding ruptured appendices, I don't know how you say that, is such a traumatic experience for like parents. Like you think your kids just, oh, I have an upset stomach. You always have an upset stomach mm-hmm. when you don't want to eat broccoli or when you don't want to go to bed. And then that could be a ruptured appendix. Yeah. Like, how do you know the difference?
I know a trick, though. So this is not meant to be medical advice. I'm not a doctor.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Not a doctor.
But a lot of the time, an appendix can be more indicative of an appendix if you have them jump up and down and it hurts worse. Or if when you push in on it and it hurts worse when you let go and not when you push in. That can be an indication of appendicitis. But again, I'm not a doctor, so don't use that as a clinical decision.
Not a doctor. This is not a bill.
This is not a bill.
This is only a podcast.
Just a podcast.
This is not a podcast.
Yeah. I'm like an executive at a healthcare payments company. Like, don't go with what I said, but just like...
Well, and this is anecdotal, but for me, I was vomiting a lot. And so that's unusual.
A lot of throwing
like,
up.
You should take me to the doctor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of vomit.
Okay. So I'll expound on mine a smidge. So I'm still like, quote unquote, in collections. It's not like on my credit report. So that's why I'm not like calling every day. They are, quote unquote, working on it. But so in that switch, I learned something really interesting. So we were on my work's plan because they covered health insurance 100%. You didn't get to pick. I mean, the choices were very limited for what you got to pick because they paid for it. I think you had single or family, essentially. And I switched to my husband's plan when we lost that instead of going into Cobra. And I was 8 weeks away from my delivery and my bill, my total out of pocket went down. So I had already paid for my entire pregnancy, delivery, everything. I'd paid in installments and they sent me a refund, which also makes this like $150 bill like that much more infuriating. I was like, you sent me money back. What? So I think I didn't even realize that the plans could cost different. Like it could be a different cost depending on what your insurer is. So that is something that I would ask my doctor, be like, okay, if I'm on this plan, what is the total package of my pregnancy and delivery going to cost? If I am on this plan, what is it going to cost? I didn't realize it had to do with the network. I didn't realize until you said that at the beginning, I would have never asked my OB, the billing department, that. But that would have been something to factor in along with monthly premium payments. So like, does it make more sense to pay a little bit higher in a premium to get this lower cost for the pregnancy versus paying a lower premium but paying more for the overall care? I didn't even know to think that. So if you are pregnant, there you go.
Definitely. Wow. Like those negotiated rates that they have with between directory services and providers are very different from insurer mm-hmm. to insurer. And like United can walk into almost any doctor's office and say, for the benefit of being a part of our network, we will offer you a 60% of what you charge to start, right? And a smaller directory would be like, what do we have to give you to be in our network? Like it's a totally mm-hmm. different negotiation, you know?
Wow.
So, you know, you want to be a part of you want to be with the bigger, you know, negotiator or get a significant discount on premium for a less significant allowed amount of negotiation. So.
So interesting. Jill?
Wow. Well, here you go. I have not interacted with health insurance very much. I've had a lot of different types of plans. Currently, though, I am on like a medical sharing plan. So it, similar to our Bill of the Week segment, this is not a bill. What I have technically isn't insurance.
Yeah.
It's more of a fail-safe.
It's a collective.
And
it's good.
And what I've learned in what little interaction I have had in getting quotes for insurance is I got to fend for myself. I got to be scrappy. And the last appointment that I went to, I mean, I really don't go to the doctor. It's kind of a problem, but it's worked for me so far. And I did have to go to the dermatologist this year.
We are not doctors giving medical
advice. No. I'm telling you, this is my anecdotal personal experience. Don't do what I do or what I say when it comes to this. I did have to go to the dermatologist this year. I did. That felt like I'm caring for myself. I'm actually going to see someone for a concern that I have, but it wasn't in network. So I was just like, I'm self-pay. I'm just going to tell these people I don't have insurance.
I was wondering if they treated you as self-pay with your insurance. That's awesome.
They did. And I'm going to... And so here's the lightning round is what did we learn? So this is kind of like medical insurance adjacent. They did tell me up front what the cost would be just to go in for the visit, but that any minor procedures or care that they provided to me in the exam room would be quoted to me in the exam room. So I'm like, okay, this is all new. Let's try it out. So I did need to have some procedures done in the exam room. They were like, lickety split. They did it super fast. And they just verbally told me the prices. So I'm sitting here just like, okay, yep. In mentally calculating it, like, yeah, we could do that. We could do that. We could do that. Get out to the front desk and it's a different price. So then I'm standing there, band-aids all over the place, like, that's not what she told me. And they're like, yeah, that's what we told you. So then she had to get the doctor to come back out. And I'm not too proud. Like, yeah, I'll sit here and like fight back with what you told me. But what I learned, so here's the, like, if there are any takeaways, if anyone's like me going into the doctor's office, I wish I would have gotten it in writing or like taken a screenshot or something, because it felt so arbitrary. Because she's like, because the front desk person was like, oh, well, we can ask, which tells me there might be different prices that they're quoting to different people. So rather than my word against their word, I wish that I would have had them, okay, what's the procedure? What's the price? What's the procedure? What's the price? I didn't get it in writing.
And the good news is that that is federally mandated, required as of January of this year for all self-pay patients. They have to provide you with what's called a good faith estimate before the service. That was covered by the No Surprises Act and was mandated into federal law in January. So from now on, if you're a self-pay patient, you should be receiving a good faith estimate from all providers for any scheduled appointment that's scheduled longer than 3 days away from today's date.
Yeah. And again, she told me, like, before I said yes to each procedure, she told me a price. It's just my recollection of what she told me, which I feel like I would be the more accurate one in that situation, because I'm the one paying it out of pocket and calculating it in my head right there on the table. Mm-hmm. So that was a bummer. But
I think being a self-pay patient is an interesting space to be in healthcare right now. Yeah. You can't really see a doctor that takes Carecaid because they have most favored nation clauses in their contracts with them. But there's a lot of really great spaces where you can self-negotiate. I think that's incredible. That's good that you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was reasonable at the end of the day, like it, but that's my, like, next time I go, I'm going to get them. We're not doing it verbal. You're putting it in writing for me. I ain't no dummy. I learned
just
things.
Just use the word good faith estimate and they are required to provide it for you.
I love
Thanks,
that.
Thanks, Eileen.
Yeah. Well, Eileen, thank you so much. If anybody wants more health insurance literacy or more from you, where would you direct them?
So I have a LinkedIn page with my name, Eileen Doherty. You can tell that it's me because it's got my picture on it. But I also have a blog called eileen.healthcare and an email address. You can contact me through that blog if you'd like to.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Eileen. This has been very informative. I have written things down because I am going to need to do some reevaluating on our health insurance this year. So I'm very, very glad that we had this interview.
It was entirely my pleasure.
Thank you.
Oh, riveting, right, yes. Jill?
I'm so glad you turned around at the gym and saw Eileen standing there with all the answers to your healthcare insurance needs and wants from a friendly face right here in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Yeah, this is a question I had. And I wanted answered. And that's why we did this. This is the episode nobody asked for, but everybody's getting because I had the questions.
We don't shy away from boring, complicated topics. You'll learn this about us.
Yeah.
And we'll still laugh. We'll have a few laughs along the way. But yes, I needed this too. So, you know, we give ourselves what we need, not what we want sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't shy away from the topics that you didn't ask for. So thanks for listening to them. Many of you know that in addition to two episodes a week, we also have a private community for listeners specifically trying to pay off debt. If that's your one goal right now, we have a membership where we do monthly money challenges to keep you engaged and moving forward with your debt payoff. And we want to congratulate one of our members for a big win. This is from Susan. And this is from when we did the values-based spending challenge back in September. She says, just thinking about my values with every purchase was so helpful. I did the challenge during the last 7 days of September, and I didn't actually make very many purchases, but I thought about this every time. It's a very different mindset for me and a real game changer. One of my values is work. I really love my job, and I've been working a lot of hours the last couple of weeks on a special project. So I decided to use a grocery delivery service for the week and spend a little extra so I could focus on working without needing to go to the store, which always takes longer than I think it should. Since I combined that with a strong meal plan, I may have even saved a little because I didn't make any impulse purchases because I wasn't at the store looking at all the things. So congrats, Susan. That is a very great benefit. And that is something even from my mom. She doesn't listen to the show, but I gave her this recommendation once. And she's like, I must have saved $20 by doing this because I avoided the $20 in impulse purchases I make every time I go to the store. And I was like, Mom, so if you have a problem with impulse spending, I have a podcast for you.
Turn around, Mom. Listen to the Frugal Friends.
Yeah. So if you or your mom has a problem with impulse spending and is trying to pay off debt, then head to frugalfriendspodcast.com/club to see what else we offer in the Frugal Friends Club.
See y'all next time.
Frugal Friends is produced by Eric Sirianni.
My mind is just on insurance and medical costs right now.
Yeah.
And how angering it all can be. That's one of the reasons, too, why I think I'm not as literate in this topic as I could be, is because even as literate as you can become, it can feel as though there's still so much work to be done just fighting these issues. It's like it's not a well-oiled machine that we're dealing with, and just, you know, understand how to add and subtract numbers. It's so complicated. And then there's so much fraud and indecency and headache and phone calls, and it feels a little bit like debilitating.
It does. Yeah. It is unjust. And I think sometimes when we're dealing with an unjust system, we can just throw up our hands and say, well, I can't change mm-hmm. it. So I don't know enough, or I don't have enough skill to come out on top. So we just don't try. And so that's like the goal with these episodes, is just to give you a little more knowledge, a little more confidence, and a little more boldness.
Yeah.
To try.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way, even after years of, you know, being in personal finance, writing about insurance, hearing experts like this talk about it, like, it still feels debilitating. Because then it comes into time that I just don't have.
It was super affirming for me to hear Eileen talk about it. We might be better off with the higher deductible and the lower monthly premium. I think, because that's my circumstance right now. And I kind of always feel like, oh, am I making like the juvenile decision, thinking nothing bad's going to happen to me? Although I do have that deductible saved as part of my emergency funds. So it's just affirming, I think. That's one major takeaway from me, because I've had that thought, like, well, I pay much higher each month to get a lower deductible, but at the end of the day, like, I might be spending more.
Yeah.
Not actually saving anything. And that's only if there's a massive catastrophe. So I think that helps too, to know, okay, be as armed and ready as possible, but also smart about what's going to be best for you individually, knowing that it's not a perfect system.
Yeah. It's not perfect, but it's our system. It's what we've got. So take advantage of it as well as you can. So I think that's kind of the moral.
And you know what? All those negotiating phone calls that we do in other aspects of our life will only serve us well for fighting these battles of medical costs and insurance coverages. And you know what? I think there's a part of me that needs to shift my perspective to, oh, this is such a hassle, I don't have time for this, to, this is a part of life. Like, I will probably monthly find myself in some sort of back and forth phone call, whether it's negotiating something, writing something, giving accurate information for something that was inaccurate. I think it's just, that is a part of being alive.
Yeah. Yeah, that is. Well,
is that,
see you later,
my version of a pep talk? Welcome to life.
Cool.
This isn't a podcast. It's real life.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.